Today on Inside Utah Politics, 100 days of the second Trump administration. Our panel weighs in on the highs and lows and what to make of his approval figures. Plus, parents and politicians eager for answers why the sponsor of the Utah Fits All Scholarship is confident the law will win its day in court. And a battle over ranked choice voting in Park City, how the format for this year's city elections became a heated issue.
Now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thanks for joining us. I am Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. We begin our program with a key milestone for the Trump administration, 100 days into the president's second term. Approval polling across several firms show the honeymoon phase seems to be over. On the lower end, the ABC Ipsos poll shows just 39% of Americans approve of the president, the lowest in history of presidential approval ratings. Our parent company's Emerson College poll paints a bit more of a mixed picture, 45% approval and the same number, 45% disapproval, with the remainder unsure. Now, the White House is pointing to immigration enforcement, the president's quick action to secure new trade deals as early achievements of the administration. Well, to sort the signal from the noise, joined today by our panel to break it all down, Adam Gardner with ASG Consulting and Rusty Cannon with Utah Credit Union Association here in the state. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Make sense of these approval numbers for me, because essentially they're saying he started higher in January than he is now, and not very great approval numbers.
Sure. I think the markets and the people of the United States are trying to tell President Trump that they're not happy and some things need to change. So I think there's something like the worst numbers in 80 years of the president's first 100 days. This is the problem. I think that we wanted to put the Biden administration and the mistakes of that administration behind us, and we were very hopeful for the Trump administration. We've seen some good things, but ultimately it's the economy, and we haven't seen a great economy with President Trump.
And the economy is what he ran on, right? Inflation was high went during the election. Some of that can be attributed to stimulus checks, things like that, which his administration did, also Biden administration did. So it's equal opportunity stimulus checks there. But Rusty, what do you make of the numbers?
You know, a lot of people want to assign grades to the first 100 days. I would give him an A on the border. That's probably the only A. I mean, if I had to grade the work on the tariffs, it would be a D. He has really fumbled that. I don't know why the insistence on doubling down on trade deficits and things that just don't seem to make sense for the American people. But aside from the border, I just think the economy, as Adam said, is the number one issue for people. Mm-hmm. And he has clearly fumbled it. And you see that in the numbers. The lowest approval that we've seen in about 80 years for the first 100 days.
Yeah, so I did want to ask you guys, the biggest win, the biggest fail, and Rusty, you sort of mentioned it there, so
yeah,
continue
border.
If you have a different take.
No, the border has been, I think, a rousing success for him and the administration. Border crossings virtually nil at this point. I mean, there's always going to be some. Done a great job there. They are getting a little bit off message on deportations as well with, you know, the one individual that keeps getting talked about. But in general, if you look at the specific polling numbers on issues, that's where he's still the highest. And I think everybody, you know, is comfortable with what he's doing there. But as far as the tariffs go and the market reaction, I would call it an unmitigated disaster for him at this point.
Interesting. Well, Adam, let me drill down on the immigration issue just a little bit. I mean, Rusty sort of mentioned it there, got a little bit of a messing issue on due process, things like that. Are we getting the messaging right here on
the
immigration?
No, he's absolutely terrible at the messaging. I think it's really horrible. He showed a Photoshop picture of the man's tattoos where they interpreted MS-13. Nobody else really interprets it as MS-13, but their administration does, and he's sticking to it. In the interview with ABC, he basically said it said MS-13 on his knuckles. It didn't. He didn't.
It was like his staff who created that. So, yeah.
Exactly. They were doing it to prove a point, a point which I get and I respect, but Rusty's completely right. We saw with this administration versus the Biden administration that rhetoric really matters on immigration. If you say we are closed for business, do not come into the country, they don't. And he's been very hostile toward illegal immigration. And I think most Americans agree with him on that point. Don't cross our border illegally. Mm-hmm. It's worked. It's been super effective. But again, on the economy, absolutely bungled. Mm-hmm. He does not. It seems to me like if you came with a message that said, hey, the world is out of balance. We're going to balance it for American interests. Here's the problem. Here's what I'm trying to fix. Here's how long it will take. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't done that.
Yeah, he's in limbo.
But you're assuming he can make a just a nice, credible, smooth message. He has such a hard time with that and fumbling. I don't know why the insistence on not at sometimes right. admitting you're wrong. Like with the Garcia, the one gentleman that's in, you know, Venezuela, easy fix. We send him to the wrong country, we bring him back, give him the due process, we send him to another country, issue over. Mm-hmm. Instead, their entire immigration message is stuck on this one individual. It's just wrong.
Yeah. And it's caused other judges to kind of follow suit and make sure that due process is really being followed by the Trump administration, even though they say because they're illegal, they get no due process. Mm-hmm. That's not how the Constitution works.
You know, one thing I was going to mention really quick, the people in the middle is the ones that I think are worth paying attention to. And in that ABC poll that also had him with very low ratings, independents were asked the question, who do you trust or do you trust these individuals on the economy? Mm-hmm. 60% said no for Donald Trump. But 76% of them said no on the Democrat Party. Mm. The idea being that his opposition is just as big of a mess.
Sure.
There's no clear leader coming out with the Democrat Party as far as the next iteration on president. There's a few names being floated, but I think they'd be wildly unpopular in general. And so the one thing he has going for him, his opposition is even worse off than him, according at least for those independents in the middle.
Yeah, interesting. Adam, you mentioned that ABC interview. I want to take a look at this clip on immigration that Terry Moran of ABC had with President Trump.
Do you acknowledge that under our law, every single person who gets deported gets a hearing first to make their case?
Well, are we talking about people that are citizens of our country or not?
No, you aren't deporting citizens at this point.
Well, let me ask you, did they get hearings when Biden allowed 21 million, because I think the number is 20 million people to flow into our country? You had 21 million people that came into our country through a stupid open border.
So this is sort of my other issue. You know, we talk about border crossings down. You call that a win on immigration, but clearly they have a messaging problem with the deportations and the due process. Are we actually solving the immigration issue? Because part of it is how you get into the country legally that we haven't even touched.
Well, I think they're doing a great job at step one. Step one, closing down the border and stopping, like Adam mentioned, taking away the incentives. That's what was backward in the Biden administration. The incentives were all messed up. It was you incentivized to get over the border because then you'd be released. Take away the incentives, think problem, or step one is taken care of. Step two of solving the immigration process is unlikely to happen in such an evenly divided Congress. I would give that possibility close to zero anytime soon.
Why isn't Congress doing anything? We have a president who is doing tariffs and immigration policy based on emergency powers that Congress gave him, but he's using, I believe, incorrectly, and Congress has refused to codify any of the cuts that he says he has made. We've spent $200 billion more in this 100 days than we did in the previous 100 days in the last administration. That's a problem. The Congress has refused to step up and codify any of the immigration changes that he's been acting upon. Congress has refused to take back any of their tariff power. These are problems that Congress has to address. But I think Republicans are nervous about standing up to the president. You have a few like Congressman Don Bacon from Nebraska in the House, who's really good at standing up to the president and who I believe is correct. And then you have allies like Rand Paul in the Senate, who are also standing up against Donald Trump and says, I don't care if this is a Republican or a Democrat. These are not your powers to have. They're Republican, or they're congressional powers that we have, and we're taking them back.
Do you think, I've heard Congresswoman Celeste Malloy say, well, let's wait and see. We've got to give President Trump time to implement these policies. To your point, you mentioned it's step one of the immigration process. Is it more time that's needed, or is Congress just unwilling to act?
Well, I think more time will help on tariffs, possibly. In fact, I would give him another 30 days to where they need to start producing some deals and moving towards having that lower tariff or zero tariff world. Otherwise, what did we do that for? That made no sense whatsoever. About 30 days left. And then on the other issues, I think they have a little bit more time. But to Adam's point, Congress needs to get their act together pretty quick.
Yeah, interesting. I want to mention DOGE just for a second. You brought it up in the spending, right? I've seen some reports say that we're spending more while trying to cut from DOGE. So do we think DOGE is actually being effective? And then the other question I'll just posed to is, if this was a Democrat administration coming out and having someone like Elon Musk come in there
George
and try
Soros.
To cut things.
That's who Republicans always mention.
Right.
Yeah. George Soros.
I feel like there would just be pitchforks in the streets. What do you make of all of that?
I actually love the idea of DOGE. I love someone coming in there and just blowing things up and cutting things. I was a huge fan. What we've seen is $155 billion in quote cuts that have not actually materialized. Congress has refused to codify any of those cuts. And not only that, but Congress extended the Biden spending for another year. So we haven't cut anything. So we complain about USAID, and there's a lot that we can complain about in that department. But we funded them for another year. We did a continuing resolution. Republicans did. And I think that's a problem. So when we have the messaging of we need to balance the budget, and then we can do the complete opposite and spend even more money, and then the Trump administration comes out and says, we want to give $5,000 to anyone considering having a baby. We want to pay for new babies. And then all the money we saved, we want to give you a $5,000 check for all the money you saved. These are not solving horrendous spending problems that we have.
Rusty, in our last minute, do you think DOGE will last?
I think it'll be pretty short-lived. The one thing DOGE has done that's positive, I think, started the conversation. Knowing what was going on in USAID was, I think, extremely helpful. Even if we haven't fixed it yet, so to speak, and cut that off.
So the awareness
Something as simple as when pensions were being processed, a retirement process for government workers, we found out it was done on paper in boxes in a mine under the ground and took months. I mean, this is ridiculous. Those kinds of things, that kind of transparency is only good. And if we solve it later, I think that's still a soft win for this administration.
Really interesting. Rusty Cannon and Adam Gardner, thank you so much for breaking down all of these issues today. I appreciate it. Well, still ahead on Inside Utah Politics, the Utah Fits All Scholarship is headed to the Supreme Court. What the bill's sponsor has to say about the lawsuit and her new laws set to take effect this week. Stay with us.
Watching Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome back to Inside Utah Politics. Parents and politicians across the state waiting for the state Supreme Court to weigh in on the Utah Fits All Scholarship Program. A lower court ruled the program is unconstitutional for using income tax revenue to fund private school tuition. I'm joined today by Representative Candace Perucci. She co-chairs the Education Committee. She also sponsored that bill, very intimately familiar with this Utah Fits All legislation. So, Representative, just talk to me about why you believe the Supreme Court might ultimately uphold this ruling.
Well, I think that the lower court, after reviewing their decision, I think they missed the mark on what this program actually does. And what it's doing is empowering parents to make the best educational decisions for their children. And the beautiful thing about our program is anyone and everyone can apply. It's open to everyone. And we prioritize low-income families and low-middle-class families who historically school choice has not been an option for them. And this program can go to homeschool, micro school, private school tuition. And we've had a lot of great success stories coming out of it. So we will absolutely be appealing this to the Utah State Supreme Court. That could take up to a year to actually get a response on it. Luckily, the program will still be in effect while we're waiting for that decision. So we'll still have families able to use the program for this next year.
Yeah, the issue here, though, was a little bit more about taking that income tax money earmarked for education and applying it to an educational program that is not open and free to all. I know you're saying anyone can apply, but not everyone can benefit.
So anyone can apply, and if we were to fully fund it, then absolutely can. I would also push back on the notion that we're taking away from public education funding, because we have, since my six sessions being in the legislature, we have increased education funding at a historic rate year after year. So we're not pulling it from public education. And also, our state constitution talks about the legislature having the ability to obviously support and fund public education and other programs that they see fit. And this would be one of those other programs, for sure.
Yeah, so other programs, I think the judge sort of addressed that in her ruling, did she not?
She walks through where she, I mean, and her ruling is really broad in that she feels like no dollars can go outside of the traditional educational model of a district school, right? But if you look at how we funded education, we have the Carson Smith, which was a true voucher in that families with special needs could apply for this and go to a private school. That, you know, is put in limbo by this, the Opportunity Scholarship. But it's pretty clear in our Constitution, income tax is for education and children. And this is a program for children.
Right, but her ruling addressed and children piece, right? That Amendment G piece was from 2020, right? Which expanded the use for income tax. So to your point, it did.
Programs for children.
Right.
And she specifically said for children with special needs, which has never been a part of this. I mean, that's what the Opportunity Scholarship is. So I would push back on that. I also think that her ruling prioritizes systems over the actual education of children in our state.
Last week, we had a State Board of Education member, Kara Lear, on the show. She talked about her perspective, why she believes this is unconstitutional. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
This is not about school choice. This is about funding the traditional public education system. The most straightforward argument is that it is unconstitutional because the private schools that would receive this money are not open and free to all students.
Your response to that?
So, again, I don't know that she's looked at how the programs actually run, quite frankly, and I think there's a lot of misinformation about the program. You apply for the scholarship. The state does not say, this is where you're going. They say, parents, where is the best place for your kids to learn? And then the parents able to direct that funding. We crafted this. This is an educational savings account. I looked at, and Senator Colomer and I, we both looked at programs across the country that had been upheld in courts, and an important distinction was that parents are the ones making the decision, not the state directing that money directly to a private school.
We're going to have to wait until the state Supreme Court weighs in to see how they settle this whole debate, because obviously it is a fundamental difference there on how you view the state constitution and how this lower court judge viewed it. So very interesting. Appreciate your thoughts on that. Turning to another education issue, this week the labor unions more or less qualified for the referendum to repeal HB 67. This is our anti-collective bargaining ban. It doesn't allow for collective bargaining. Just your thoughts on their sheer amount of numbers and the groups who say they won't try to stop this from getting on the ballot.
So, no surprise, in my opinion, I think unions organize. That's what they do, right? So they were able to get those. I will tell you, I've had constituents reach out in the past few weeks asking me how to get their name off of the petition and their signature. They felt really pressured at the door. And I've talked to other colleagues who have had similar interactions, and I've told them, you got to fill out this form and take it into your clerk or mail it in, right? But yes, inevitably, this will move forward. I think there's a lot of misinformation about the bill that we passed. This is not an anti-association bill. Teachers can still choose to be a part of the union, but what we said is we're not going to have collective bargaining in the public sector, which is a very conservative principle that goes back to Ronald Reagan, right? So no surprise there, and we have done a lot for teachers in our state, firefighters, police officers, and I'll tell you, I don't feel like the union actually represents the interests of teachers and certainly not the students in our state. And so I think that we can still be successful in moving forward whenever this is on the ballot to still uphold the law.
What is the point of a union or an association if you can't collectively bargain?
There's a lot of different things you can do. You can still advocate for work conditions. You can still be a part of the organization process. What this is looking at, though, is not holding hostage the government. And also, they can't even demonstrate what percentage of teachers they represent. And when I talk to most teachers, a lot of them join the union because they want the insurance component, which is a big part of this bill that's getting looked over. Is we worked with risk management to make sure that teachers could have a monthly insurance policy so they wouldn't have to join the union to have that.
So what is the likelihood the legislature comes back to try to repeal this in order to stave off this ballot fight?
I don't think we're going to be repealing this. I really do think, and you know, I'll speak for me personally, I stand by the policy. I think it's good policy. I don't think it's appropriate to have taxpayers subsidizing this when you look at the schools and the preferential treatment they're getting. I think we need more transparency. And also, I think we need to communicate with our teachers and firefighters and policemen directly and have their employers do that.
Switching to a bunch of laws that take effect May 7th. I want to talk about one in particular that deals with immigration. Mm-hmm. We passed about 10 immigration bills this past legislative session, but one key one makes penalties for Class A misdemeanors against a person punishable by one more day, mm-hmm. right? So it's 365 days as opposed to 364. Talk about what that means and why you believe that's good policy.
So that's a significant change, because in not having that, it means that an individual who is in our country illegally or not here with any legal status cannot be deported. And historically, ICE has waited and said you have to have 365-day penalty for us to actually deport you. So and I think it's an important distinction that you highlighted, is it was crimes against persons. So we're talking about child abuse of a child, harming someone, aggravated assault, right? There are some pretty serious crimes that are Class A misdemeanors that we were only giving 364 days for. So that's the significance of it. And We were able to get bipartisan support of the House and also pass it out of the Senate and have the governor sign it.
The critics worry this will sweep up people who are here legally, but maybe get caught up in some sort of crime, get sentenced for a year and get deported. We break up families, people who are here legally. I want to take another look at one of your Senate colleagues who pushed back on this bill.
The way that this bill is drafted does not change the treatment of those who are not here lawfully. So we're not even talking about a lawful resident who commits a felony. We are talking only about expediting the deportation of a lawful resident who has committed a misdemeanor.
Is he right?
So based off federal policy, and this is federal and state policy interacting, if you are here not as a citizen, you haven't applied for citizenship, but say you're here on a visa or a green card and you commit one of these violent Class A misdemeanors, then yes, their policy is that you've been convicted of this, so you're eligible also for deportation. Again, I would, to the good senator, ask him to look at that list of crimes and see what he's comfortable with. If you're in our country and not a citizen, it is not a guarantee. Right? And so based off of good behavior, you stay. But if you're going to be sexually abusing a child or aggravated assault or something, one of these heinous crimes, then yeah, you also are subject to the penalty of possible deportation.
One of those crimes is stalking. Mm-hmm. So I think the example was given on the Senate floor that, you know, a individual who was here legally could run into their ex at a grocery store and be charged with stalking, violating a protective order, something like that.
It is way harder to get charged with stalking. I've worked on stalking policies before, and I would say if you talk to victims, it's actually pretty hard to get a real stalking order against someone. So I would push back on that really hard and say it's not just haphazardly running into someone at the grocery store. It's repeated contact and effort to intimidate. And so, yeah, I think stalking is a huge part of domestic violence, and that's one of the crimes that you'd be deported for, and I have no problem with that.
We'll have to watch and see when this law is implemented on May 7th, how it all takes effect. Representative Candace Perucci, a House member and a sponsor of some of these legislation, we appreciate your time today. Well, coming up on Inside Utah Politics, a snafu over ranked choice voting in Park City, why the city will not use the new system this November. Stay with us. Well, Park City is moving away from ranked choice voting in a sudden reversal. The council had given the new voting method the green light for this year's municipal election in March, but concerns over election security with a different election system and concerns that the system favors incumbents led them to revisit the issue in a special meeting on Monday. Now, those issues, the reported involvement of Utah County Clerk Aaron Davidson, and the suddenness of the change made for a heated discussion on the dais.
We heard from the Utah clerk, a known election denier, who has is well on the record that elections are stolen. All his ideas have been well debunked.
To be clear, I did not even read this email sent by Utah County Clerk Mr. Davidson.
Changing the rules after telling the public that they had until August to file sends the wrong message. It creates distrust, it's bad form, and it looks political.
This isn't about partisan politics. You know, we heard names thrown out before like Rudy Giuliani and Carrie Lake and Donald Trump and MAGA. You know, what I would say is the stark difference between those people and me is I'm here tonight saying I made a mistake.
Well, the council ultimately voted 3-2 to drop ranked choice voting. The change in course means Park City's election filing deadline will now open June 2nd and run through June 9th to make time for a potential primary process. The mayor's seat is up for a vote alongside two of the city council positions. We're also keeping an eye on the dozens of Utah laws set to take effect this week, May 7th, the default effective date in Utah. That means this year, the ban on public sector collective bargaining, pride flags in government buildings, and added fluoride in public water all take effect. Now, that's assuming no last-minute lawsuits or action from the legislature. Well, that's going to do it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure to reach out. You can email InsideUtahPolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow along with me. I'm on social media, X, Blue Sky, Threads, Instagram, Lindsay on Air. You can also find our show online in podcast form. Search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thanks for being with us, everyone. We will see you next week.